Next is manufacturing. So, manufacturing is the process of creating goods for use or sale through the utilization of labor, machines, tools, chemicals, biological processes, or formulation. All these could be manufacturing, like a specialty chemical company. Chemicals are the raw material and the processes could be chemical. It's a chemical synthesis or polymerization, which is actually used to make a finished product. If it's a mechanical product or an engineering product, then it will be machinery, tools, etc. You'll require machine tools. You'll have lathes or CNC machines, etc. to actually manufacture the product. The term encompasses a wide range of human activities from traditional handicrafts to cutting-edge technology, but is most associated with industrial production, where raw materials are converted into finished products on a large scale. The Industrial Revolution has actually brought in this large scale of production because that brings down the cost of production and makes the products very, very affordable. Most of the people can buy it. Manufacturing will continue to be a crucial driver of economic growth, as a wide range of products will always need to be manufactured. And we have seen this, that even if there is an advancement in the technology, so in the good old days it was calculator, then it was laptops, then it was mobile phones, but you do require the products. And even you look at the automobiles, etc., technology changes, but the products remain. So manufacturing will always continue because apart from food, which needs to be grown, even if you look at that, you know, the food and beverage industry further, you know, processes the edible products into, let's say, ready-to-eat snacks, etc. So manufacturing is crucial. Inventory management. Inventory management encompasses various activities that are implemented to maintain optimal quantity or volume of each inventory item. So we talked about this, why you require the optimum quantity or optimal quantity. The primary objective of inventory management is to ensure uninterrupted production, sales, and customer service levels while minimizing the cost. So you want that there should be no interruptions. At the same time, the cost should be minimized. So you're not blocking your capital, or even inventory carrying cost is there. For example, let's say that there is a car manufacturer which makes car, and they have area where they can store 1,000 cars. Now, the space which is required for parking those 1,000 vehicles costs money. Now, this may be a very simple case, but look at an engineering goods producer. They require huge warehouses, and warehouse does not really add value. So you are, you know, maintaining warehouses with all the safety features, etc. You have material handling equipment, and all for just keeping the material, which is not actually adding value or gaining money for the company. You get money only when you sell the product. That means either you sell it to the consumer or you actually sell the product to, or transfer the product to the distributor. So the objective is to optimize the inventory holding. Demand planning. Demand planning is the procedure of predicting customer demand to guide the fulfillment of that demand by the company's supply chain and business administration. Forecasting demand includes a variety of methods ranging from informal approaches like expert opinions to quantitative methods like analyzing historical sales data and statistical models, or even utilizing real-time data from pilot markets. So again, you know, the demand or the manufacturing is not constant. The demand can keep on varying. Now, it can be seasonal. You have something which only sells during, let's say, Diwali time, or something which sells only during Christmas time. So there are certain patterns, and demand planning or forecasting uses various methods. So one method could be how you have sold the product in the last, let's say, 6 months or 1 year. Now, there could be certain patterns which are annual in nature. Like we said that there are festivals, and you find that during a particular festival, the cycle goes up. Take the case of garments. There are certain seasons when many weddings take place. You will find that the garment sale is actually at a peak during that season. There are other times, especially during the monsoon and certain times, you know, when marriages don't take place. So at the time, you will find that a lot of sales are announced. You know, companies will announce discount on their products because they are trying to liquidate their stock. So the demand planning takes all these into account. And this can be done, like they say, with expert opinion. So there are experts who can predict and say that, okay, next month or the month after next, the demand will be so much. Why do you require demand planning? Because certain raw materials have a long lead time. Let us say you have a raw material which takes 2 months or 2 months to acquire. That means from the time you place the order and the time you receive the material, it takes 2 months. So if you suddenly say today that I want this material, I want more quantity of this material, you will not get it. You will have to wait for 2 months for the additional quantity to come in. And this is the reason the demand planning is important. The forecasting is important. Demand forecasting can be applied in production scheduling, stock control, and occasionally in evaluating the future capacity needs or in determining whether to venture into a new market. So assume that you have a plant which has a certain capacity and you find that your demand is constantly increasing. A point will come when your capacity will be fully utilized. So there you need to take a decision whether you need to further expand on your capacities, because even expanding the capacity is going to take some time. It means that you need to find a place where you're going to install the new equipment. You will have to order the equipment, install them, commission them. So it could be anywhere between a few months to maybe a year to actually expand your capacity. In bigger projects, it could be even longer. So you have to also look at the long-term demand forecasting to actually look at whether you require additional capacities, etc. Coming to warehousing. So it is the management of goods and material that involve a range of administrative and physical tasks related to storage, this task encompasses receiving, identifying, inspecting, verifying, storing, retrieving for distribution and more. So what does the warehousing do? And we spoke about this a little earlier, that warehousing is not only for the finished product, it is also for the raw material. So when you receive the raw material, you have to actually check the quality, you have to check the quantity, and you have to keep track of it. There will be certain companies, where it's very important to follow the first in, first out. So whichever material came first, or even if the material is perishable, it has got a shelf life, then you will have to take care that these materials are used in the manufacture before the shelf life expires. So these are all the items or the activities which a warehouse has to perform. So this is applicable to raw material. It may be applicable to intermediates and is also applicable to the finished products. Warehousing is no longer just about storing products. It has transformed into a distribution center that can even customize final products through repackaging, labeling, and other physical alterations. So the warehouse also will, earlier, okay, it was understood that you will just take a box and you will ship it out, or you will ship out the material to the retailer. Today, they are also doing the picking and they do the consolidation. So let us say a customer wants a certain combination of products. Let us say that he is buying a TV, and along with the TV, he wants to buy, Blu-ray, player, or he wants to buy something else. So you are actually clubbing all these things together, and then you are making it ready for shipment. So even in some cases, certain amount of customization is done in the warehouse, which is not possible at the manufacturing stage. So products are designed in such a way that they can be customized. Take the example of, let's say, hi-fi equipment, where you are buying an amplifier separately, you are buying the speaker separately. Now, you are having a choice of selecting different size and different type of speakers. They cost different. So depending upon the quality that you are willing to invest in, you can choose the speakers. And this is customized at the warehouse level. So at the warehouse, they will choose the material, they will repack it, label it as to where it has to go, to whom it has to go, and make it ready for shipment. Coming to transportation, the transfer of individuals, animals, and commodities from one place to another is known as transportation. Various modes of transportation such as air, rail, road, water, cable, pipeline, and space are utilized for this purpose. The transportation sector can be categorized into infrastructure, vehicle, and operations, facilitating trade between individuals. Transportation plays a crucial role in the advancement of civilization. So basically, the transportation is transfer of, here they have given the example of individuals and animals, but we are here mostly talking about the commodities or the goods, the end products. Not just the end products, because we are also talking of raw materials, we are talking of intermediates, etc. So all these, the transportation is involved. Transportation plays a crucial role in the supply chain, as it is the linchpin that ensures products reach customers on time. Transportation is important because, one, material has to reach in good condition without any damage, etc. Number two, it has to reach on time. That means in the shortest possible time. Why I would say? Because if the transportation takes too long a time, you are required to then hold additional inventories at various points. So to improve on the customer experience, on the customer satisfaction, you have to ensure quick deliveries. And that is the reason today you have e-commerce where you get products within a day. And you have the quick commerce where you get products within minutes. So why is it so? Because today nobody has the patience to wait. So people want the material quickly. And this is when we say on time, the definition of on time could be different. So for a particular product, on time could mean 2 days. Whereas for quick commerce, it could mean few minutes. So that's on time. A company may have the perfect product in stock at the right warehouse, but without efficient transportation, it will not reach the customer as needed. So this example we have seen in quick commerce and e-commerce. In e-commerce also, let us say you order something. Let us say that the material is delivered in 1 day or 2 days, you're happy. Let us say they take 4 days to deliver, you're certainly not happy because it does not meet your expectation. So while the product is available, if the transportation is going to take too long, then that's not really going to add to the customer satisfaction. So this is what it says, that without efficient transportation, it will not reach the customers as needed. So in today's interconnected global economy, the transportation function has become even more vital. And that you can see the quick commerce, how quickly material flows. By the time you place the order, the material is almost picked in the warehouse, it's being packed, being invoiced, and within a minute or maybe 2 minutes, it is actually on the way to your home or wherever you want it. Coming to customer service. Customer service is an essential aspect of guaranteeing customer commitment with a product or service. Typically, a customer service occurs during the customer's transaction, such as purchase or return. It can be carried out through face-to-face interaction, phone call, self-service systems, or other methods. So we saw this, that even if you buy a refrigerator or a TV, you will find that the customer service executive will actually visit you, install the device, give you a short demo, give you a little training on how the product is to be used. In case you have any problems, they will even come visit your place, check out whether the product is genuine. If it is something they can rectify, they will do so. So customer service includes all these. And what they have said is it can be face-to-face, it can be phone call. So in case of, let's say, e-commerce, you want to return something or you have a complaint, you can make a phone call. Self-service systems. So for many of these softwares, if you face a problem, then there is a support which is available on the software. And you can immediately use the service to actually identify, like for example, the help facility which you have in many of the softwares will actually give you solutions to common problems that you're facing. So there could be customer service delivered in multiple ways. So let's look at what are the roles in supply chain. So demand planning manager. In purchasing, you have the coordinator or analyst. You have the materials manager, corporate purchasing manager. In manufacturing, you have the production planner, the production manager, corporate manager, planning manager, plant manager, line operator, machine operator, QA analyst, and engineers. When it comes to inventory, inventory analyst, inventory manager, cycle counter, deployment planner or manager, and deployment planner. Warehousing, you have the forklift drivers, the order pickers, supervisors, operations manager, inventory analyst, customer service persons, dock scheduler, and corporate warehousing analyst or manager. In transportation, you have the drivers, the dispatchers, engineers, asset managers, brokers, corporate transportation analyst or manager. In customer service, you have the customer service coordinator, the vendor managed inventory analyst, or the import-export analyst or manager. This is for, you know, components, etc., which are either imported or being exported. Other supporting roles are like IT or information technology, human resource, project management, engineering and marketing, especially for the 3PL companies, that is third-party logistic companies, sales, finance, and accounting. So these are the various roles that we see in the supply chain. Of course, this is a very simplified version. There could be further people which are involved in the supply chain depending upon the size and complexity of the organization. So let's look at some of the examples of supply chain. So generic supply chain. The supply chain commences with the sourcing and extraction of raw material. These raw materials are then transported by logistics provider to a supplier who functions as the wholesaler. We already saw this, that there are people who trade. So they are buying the produce from small farmers and then selling it to the processors or the manufacturers. The materials are subsequently sent to the manufacturer or potentially to multiple manufacturers for refinement and processing into a final product. So they have shown the sequence here. You have the raw material, the logistics goes to the supplier, from supplier goes to the manufacturer, from manufacturer to distributor, distributor to retailer, and retailer to consumer. and what comes from the consumer is the demand, because the demand drives the requirement of raw material, which drives the entire cycle. So let's look at the e-commerce supply chain. The e-commerce company in this scenario runs a website that offers a variety of products for sale. When a customer makes a purchase, the order is processed through technology like checkout cart. That means you have a concept of a virtual cart, an order system, or a third party platform like Shopify. Payment processor handles the financial transaction. So you may have either UPI or you have one of the gateways, payment gateways, you know, which will allow you to make a payment through net banking or credit card, debit card, as the case may be, which in turn initiates a new supply chain. So once you order the item, you pay for the item, then the supply chain kicks in. Some places they may even have the option of letting you pay for the material on receipt of the goods. So nevertheless, once you place the order, the supply chain kicks in. Once an order is placed, the warehouse receives the order and prepares the product for shipment. So picking happens, picking, labeling, invoicing, and the warehouse can either be operated in-house or by a third-party logistics provider. So in many cases, in e-commerce, you have an in-house logistics partner. In some cases, e-commerce companies have a third party or a affiliate, which is actually running the logistics firm, because both are very, very specialized operations. So they like to keep it separate. Also, when you have a separate logistics provider, he can be a logistics provider for other e-commerce companies. So that is the advantage of having a third party logistics provider. Subsequently, the order moves from the warehouse to the shipping company. So, you know, we saw that in the warehouse, they do the picking, the invoicing, labeling, even some packing. So if there are three items ordered, they will consolidate the three items into a single pack, label it, and then they will hand it over to the shipping company or the logistics firm. The shipping process may be managed internally or third party, which we saw in the earlier slide. Shipping service, upon delivery, the package reaches the customer doorsteps, completing the transaction. Very easily said, but you can imagine the number of steps, because all the packages, they are collected, they go to a hub, from there they are distributed depending upon which part of the country they have to go to, and then they are distributed. After reaching those destinations, they are further split or distributed by the particular area in which the delivery is to be made. So at every stage there is a cross-docking, and the goods are constantly on the move. So this is the example of e-commerce. So you have the e-commerce platform, you have the product order, you order an item, the warehouse actually picks the item, hands it over to the shipping company, and the shipping company delivers it to the customer. In between, you have the payment gateway. So it could be a UPI or a third party agency which is actually collecting the payment on behalf of the e-commerce company. Now let's look at the example of industries that heavily bank on supply chain. So fast moving consumer goods. Now what are the fast moving consumer goods? Consumer goods are things that you consume day in, day out. Soaps, toothpaste, shaving cream, even blades. So all these are fast moving consumer goods. Consumer durables. So here you have the white goods, you have the televisions, the washing machines, air conditioners, etc., automobiles, e-commerce, which can encompass all the above. Of course, I haven't seen automobiles being sold on e-commerce, but you do have consumer durables and FMCG on e-commerce. And finally, retail, which is the traditional brick and mortar model. So the importance of supply chain for our organization. it's important to understand the supply chain for an organization. Mapping out a supply chain is a crucial step in conducting external analysis during the strategic process. It's very important to map or plan out your supply chain, because an efficient supply chain can make an organization and give it success. A not so good supply chain can actually destroy a business. Clearly defining the supply chain helps the organization identify its markets and determine its future direction. So when formulating corporate level strategies, organization often face the decision of whether to focus on a single line of business or diversify into related on or unrelated industries. So also, you know, depending upon the strategies which the organization adopts, whether they want to go for a single line, meaning to say only one kind of product. Now, if you see the white goods, there are companies which make everything from, let's say, air conditioners to washing machine to televisions, etc. So here they are diversifying into related industry, in the sense it is white goods, but unrelated, because the nature of the goods are totally different. You cannot compare a television with a washing machine or with air conditioners. So this is a part of the corporate strategy or the decision making. Each stage of the supply chain represents a distinct industry, such as raw material extraction and manufacturing. So we saw even in the case of the aluminum industry example that I gave you, mining the ore is a totally a different ballgame. Converting the ore into alumina is more of a chemical process. Converting the alumina into aluminum metal is a metallurgical process. And converting that metal into aluminum sheets or aluminum foil extrusions, again, is a metallurgical process. So at every stage, the manufacturing is distinctly different. By comprehensively understanding the various players involved in each stage, the organization gains valuable insights into the attractiveness and competitiveness of the industries it may consider entering in the future. So you must have seen that there are companies which buy the raw material, and there are companies which go for backward integration. So the company may find that they are very heavily dependent on their suppliers for the raw material, and there is a substantial margin there, but they are not able to get the products at a competitive rate. In such cases, the company may take a decision to go for a backward integration, where instead of buying that product, buying the raw material or buying the components, you start manufacturing them. So you are actually going for a backward integration. Same is true even for forward integration, that you are already making, let's say, components, and you feel that you are not getting the desired value. One example I'll give you. In textile, making of the fabric is not that lucrative. But when you go into garments gives you much more value. So if you look at the cost of fabric which goes into making a shirt, it may be hardly say 300 rupees or 400 rupees for the best premium quality fabric, etc. Once you tailor it and then you make a shirt out of it, your cost may be, let's say, 700 rupees, but you are able to sell the shirt in the market at, let's say, 3000 rupees. So this is where a company may decide to go for a forward integration. Like, they are already making the fabric and they would like to go into, of course, every step has its complexity, and these are essentially very strategic decision, because the moment you go into manufacturing, then you also need to have the distribution network, you will need to have your own showrooms, etc. Unforeseen disasters. So these are events of historical significance that cannot be predicted and result in immense financial losses amounting to trillions of dollars. instances of such disaster encompass acts of extreme terrorism and widespread cyber attack. So we do listen to such instances, you know, where there are terror attacks. You may remember that there was the Mumbai terror attack where, you know, the city almost was paralyzed for 3 or 4 days. Similarly, you have natural calamities, you know, the flood in Mumbai, that was 7/11. So these kind of disasters, they not only affect your operations, they also sometimes affect the stocks which are lying. Because let us say there is flooding, there is tsunami, it can affect you know, your warehouses, etc., and can lead to damage of goods, which means that your inventories are wiped out or they become of a very low value. Predictable disasters, events falling under this classification share similarities with unexpected catastrophes, but are distinguishable by the fact that broader trends and likelihood can inform overall readiness. Instances are like economic downturn and worldwide military confrontations. So currently we are seeing the Ukraine war. We have seen how it has affected the Western world. We have seen that because of the war, the oil prices have gone up, energy prices have gone up, inflation has gone up. Now this can affect your markets. Like for example, you know, wherever luxury goods are concerned, you will find that at times like this, the income which is available in the hands of the people, the income which can be spent on luxury, diminishes. And because of that, you will find that demand for certain class of items will suddenly reduce. Even we saw that during the COVID, you know, people were not moving out of the house. So people were not buying new garments. I mean, if you go to the office, then you need to buy formal clothes. So you need to buy formal clothes, etc. But when you're operating from home, then you are actually operating in your shorts or t-shirts and pajamas and, you know, things like that. So you will find that these kind of events will affect you know, industries. So what are the other reasons for disruption in the supply chain? Unexpected interruptions. So these events are significant and expensive, yet they are not as severe as disasters. So the instances here are data breach. So, you know, this is again an extension of the system being hacked, data being breached, sensitive data being leaked, you know, on the dark net or dark web, as they call it. Product recall. You must have heard that, you know, car manufacturers or even other items, they find that there is a serious design flaw in the product and they have to recall vehicles, you know, by thousands to replace the defective component. And of course, there are industrial accidents like fire, or sometimes there is a major breakdown of certain equipment, you know, which is not easily replaceable. So all these are unexpected interruptions. Predictable disturbances. Certain disturbances can be anticipated before they occur. Instances of these include the trade disputes between countries. So China, US is one example. And the departure of UK from European Union, that is another thing. So it does affect the supply chain and the supply equation, because when they were part of the EU, there was a free movement of material between UK and EU. But the moment they separate out because of the Brexit, then there are certain hurdles, there are some barriers which come in the process. So these are also some of the disturbances or disruptions. Type of risk in the supply chain. So most of the risks that have the potential to disrupt supply chain operations can be classified in four categories. So what are they? One is the economic, environmental, political, and ethical. Economic challenges arise from a supplier facing bankruptcy, because of recession, because there is an overall recession. There is, I mean, we just talked about, you know, the Ukraine war and the recession, which is because of the high inflation or a halt in production at a crucial manufacturing ally. So we saw that in many cases, one of your supplier or somebody goes bankrupt. Sometimes it can affect you because your customer goes bankrupt. And imagine, because that's going to put a very big challenge, since whatever supplies you have made, the money that you're supposed to receive against it may not be coming, or may not be coming immediately till there is a resolution or the company goes into liquidation. Environmental challenges encompass natural calamities such as floods, earthquakes, or drought. So again, these, we talked about the tsunamis, the flooding, which happens because of, you know, torrential rains, etc., or earthquake, which can disrupt. Political risk. So this can be, you know, because of civil disturbances or civil unrest, or new leader imposing high tariff or trade restrictions. This is what we are seeing in the case of USA at the moment. Utilizing, the third point is utilizing child labor, forced labor, or obtaining raw material from a company that neglects to provide adequate protective gear for its employee, which can raise you know, ethical dilemmas. So here, in the ethical risk, all these come into picture. There are companies or there are countries where this protection is not available. So you will find that child labor is being you know, employed. Or it could be that people are treated as slaves, what we call as the forced labor. And these are clearly unethical practices. types of risk in the supply chain. So similar views were echoed by Rodericks earlier. The following are the two categories of risk. One is the internal risk, which is internal to the organization. So risk originating from within the organization are those that can be managed or impacted. So these depend on the organization, and these can be controlled. So these encompass factors such as budget projections, personnel allocation, timetable setbacks, and configuration of the product. Let's talk of the external risk. So these are not related to the organization, but these are external to the organization. So external risks are associated with factors which are beyond the organization's control. This can include the market conditions, so sudden change in the market or preference for a product. Suddenly you find that the market preference has changed. Political stability, that is, you have seen the situation in Bangladesh where there is a political unrest. So this is something, you know, for the textile industry in Bangladesh, they are bleeding very heavily. They have orders which they are committed to supply, but because of the political unrest, they are not able to fulfill the orders. So political stability, regulatory changes. So you find that in US, Europe, there are certain regulatory requirement. Your chemicals that you use, your product you use, they have to meet certain requirement. Even in terms of food grains, etc., you know, now there is an increasing trend towards organic. That means you are not supposed to use certain kind of pesticides or insecticides, etc., while growing the crop. This is true even for cotton, etc., and there are regulations even for cotton and cotton fabrics, cotton products. So the next one is the economic fluctuations, which we already talked about, and other external influences that can impact the organization's operation, but which are not within the control of the organization. So here, the organization has to overcome these by either complying with whatever changes that have happened. Like, for example, if the market has changed, then you need to introduce new products which are as per the market's demand or requirement. In terms of even regulatory changes, you will have to quickly ensure that your product complies with the new regulations. With that, we come to the end of the chapter. Thank you.